Welcome to another edition of Simons Says, a podcast devoted to conversationalists and the curious-minded. Here's your host, me, the follically challenged Dave Simons, certified financial planner and all-around nice guy. Hello again, everybody. So let's say that you've got a product in your mind that you just know is really going to sell, or a service of some sort. You just have to get it out there into the public somehow. And you don't really have a business or marketing degree, so you're thinking, oh man, you know, I need to take some business classes. So you sign up. Now you're taking business classes because you know that's the only thing that's missing to get the world to understand that you have the next great thing to sell in whatever industry is going to take it by storm. So one day you're sitting in your business class and the professor comes in and he says, all right, class, today is going to be opposite day. Okay. I am going to show you the things that you do not want to do if you want your business to succeed or your product idea. In other words, you do these things that I'm about to tell you and I guarantee you will fail. Well, this is kind of interesting. All right. And the professor says, okay, three things. Here's number one. Don't tell anybody. Yeah, don't advertise. Don't let anybody know what your product or service is. Don't get the word out. Shh, hush, hush. Like, okay, that's sort of a no-brainer, right? You do want to get the word out. But I get it. It's opposite day. We're trying to learn what not to do. Okay, that's number one. The professor says, number two, don't go directly to the consumer. Make it more difficult for the end user, that buyer, to get to your product. How about an intermediary, a middleman? Make it difficult. Put all kinds of roadblocks in the way. Like, man, okay, this seems pretty obvious to me. That's not what you want to do. But I get it. Those are two things now. If I want my business idea to fail, I'll do those two things. Number three, you as the chairman, the CEO of your newly formed company, you want to get as political as you can. You want to take a stand. You want to let the world know what you believe this country should be doing or not doing. Get out there. We kind of know how that's been going with a couple of high profile companies, right? Now, you think I'm being silly. Of course, nobody is going to do that. It's so obvious. However, there actually is one company I know of who is doing those three things, violating, you would think, basic business tenets. You don't even have to be in business school, right, to know that A, you should probably advertise and get the word out. Number two, you should make it as easy as you can to get your buyers to come directly to you to get your product, right? And three, maybe even if you have very strong political viewpoints, maybe keep them to yourself a little bit because you know you're going to alienate anywhere from a third to a half of your potential buying public. Folks, there is a company, a corporation, privately held in my profession. They, for years, were well known in something called unit investment trusts. They still sell those closed-end funds. In the past decade plus, but really in the last number of years, they have become one of the major players in the world in something known as exchange-traded funds, ETFs. Investors, amateur, do-it-yourself to professionals like me, that's kind of been the go-to thing now, ETFs, especially these new actively managed ETFs. The business, and in particular, the chairman and CEO as the guest on the Simon Says podcast today, basically have done all those three things you're not supposed to do. Number one, by the way, this is First Trust Portfolios. They do not advertise. You won't see First Trust Portfolios with a big spread in the Wall Street Journal or in Barron's. You won't see them on CNBC. You won't see them on Fox Business. Number two, you can't pick up your phone and get your investing app and just buy a First Trust ETF. You can't go directly to their website. Oh, let's see, firsttrustportfolios.com or whatever that might be. I really like these actively managed ETFs. That looks like a really good, you can't do it. You have to use someone like me. You have to use a financial advisor. And third, and this is the more interesting, if not provocative one, the chairman and CEO of First Trust, Jim Bowen, is not afraid to let anybody know what he thinks is right with this country and is wrong with this country. So it takes on a little bit of a political feel. The first time I ever saw Jim Bowen speak, and it's typically only to investment advisors, I have to admit, I was taken back. I found it very entertaining. It was wonderful to get his viewpoints on the markets and all that stuff and the product line at First Trust. But man, when he started to talk about politics and he started to get into some of the social issues of the day, am I getting a little hot under the cut? Is it just me? Because I'm not used to that. So with that said, a shorter version of the Simon Says long form podcast, but definitely one of the more provocative and interesting ones that I have yet to record. So this was last week, my recording with the chairman and CEO of First Trust Portfolios, Jim Bowen. He is the chairman and CEO of First Trust Portfolios, Jim Bowen. Jim, welcome.
Good to be here, David. Thank you.
You bet. You are passing through St. Louis. We're recording this in mid-July. You are a very busy man. I appreciate you giving us some time here. I think, you meet with Taylor Swift after we're done? Maybe the Pope after that?
Yeah, no, not this trip.
not this trip. Well, thank you so much. You heard me talk about the fact that you are one of the most successful companies that nobody's ever heard of. There is a modicum of truth to that. And as I was doing some research for this podcast, this is what really struck me. There's not a lot of information compared to what I can get on a Vanguard or a Fidelity or a State Street, which is big into ETFs. First Trust, here's this little article that was written 3 or 4 years ago. Address that, would you, as we start this, to say this has to be intentional. Why do I not see First Trust advertising in the Wall Street Journal in Barron's on CNBC?
Yeah, it's very intentional, Dave. We believe the financial advisor is the point of the spear. We believe we serve the financial advisor. It sounds really corny unless you believe it. We believe it. I've been in the business 42 years. This has been the way I've seen the world for 42 years. The company before this one, I was involved, I steered it the same way. It's all about the advisor. I look at advisors as noble people. There aren't many in my role in financial services in the country that do. Mm-hmm. And I find that stunning. Because when you look at what they do, I kind of coined this phrase 10, 12 years ago, financial advisors are the guardians of the wealth of the most productive people on earth who are not happy holding their own wealth. They need an advisor to help them guard their wealth. That's an extraordinary statement. That's an extraordinary responsibility. And it's a thankless job. Most of the time, when you need the advisor the most is when you're mad at him the most.
Yep.
And when you don't need him because markets are running, you think he's not adding value. It's an extraordinary job. But a great advisor, a great one, will certainly touch two generations of a family's wealth and occasionally three. And these are people that, by and large, labor outside of the light for others. Sounds a whole lot like servants to me. Okay.
Well, is that how you then, so it's been more organic, it's more word of mouth, it's more of the advisors who are kind of your customers.
Absolutely.
Are the financial advisors.
Better believe it.
And in full disclosure, me being a CFP professional and investment advisor, we do use First Trust products and have for a number of years. But so that's how you've been able to grow. It's nothing more complicated than that, I guess.
No, it's really, yeah. It's not a complex McKinsey system, okay? It's a in the field, working hard day after day. We just grind and we're not in a hurry. That's one of the beauties of being a privately held company. We're not in a hurry.
So I would love to get into your background a little bit. You are a California kid.
Yeah, I'm native.
By way of Chicago. Right. Tell me about that. Why'd you go to Chicago?
Right. I wasn't good enough to play Division I football, but I could play Division III football.
Oh,
Wheaton College came.
Oh, Wheaton.
Yep.
Okay.
So I went to Wheaton College. That's how I got back to Chicago. And then once you're in Chicago, you, if you're kind of towards business back then, the Merck was a was an opportunity, and I went from the Merck. I went into real estate, limited partnership business, and then I got into the torrid world of fixed income.
The exciting.
From the bellies,
yes.
From the bellies to the bonds, yeah.
So I know there we could spend hours literally and make this fascinating about
right.
All the things that came into being about First Trust and where you
right.
are, but I want to kind of go along the continuum to where you are actually buying First Trust. So this yeah. was a company that already existed. Tell me about the kind of company yeah. First Trust was at the time
yeah.
and why you bought them.
Yeah. So I was at Clayton Brown and Associates, which is one of the municipal bond houses boutiques that was in Chicago at the time. And I was running the package product part of that business. And then by word of mouth, I found out Bob Van Kampen was going to get back into the business. He had sold his business back in 85 to Xerox. So myself and four others joined Bob, and we bought my business from Clayton Brown, and that was in 91. And so we started just basically a little unit trust business with 38 people in 1991. And Bob passed away in 1999. He had been our general partner. So then in 2010, I bought the general partner from the Van Kampen family. And we've just kept growing. Last year, we went over 1,000 people.
So where are you in the ranking of ETFs? You're top five, six, somewhere
we're
in there?
We're six, yeah.
Sixth.
Yeah.
Goals to be what?
Realistic goals to get to four.
Okay.
Yeah, realistic goals. But I'm far less concerned about volume than I am about profitability. So we are a little bit of a wider spread group. We add value. So we do a lot of actively managed ETFs. We believe in management. We believe in not just indices. If someone wants to just do an indice and just no alpha, just beta, well, don't come here. Go over there. Okay. Because we believe that there are rules, and rules-based investing can win over the long run. So we believe that we're going to generate alpha. We should get paid for it, because at the same time, we need to reward the advisors who are bringing us their clients.
Mm-hmm.
So we spend all of our money not on advertising. We spend our money on intellectual capital for our advisors. And we help our advisors. We create product for the advisor. And we create the verbiage to help the advisor put that on the shelf for the client.
Jim, what about you? I want you to do some self-examination, which can be uncomfortable for some people. But this is where I'm intrigued. And this is right. why I really love biographies and things like that. And I love right. documentaries and all that. So what are your personality traits that have led to your success? Why are you successful in business? What have you put together from a corporate level, even a personal level, that has created one of the most successful investment-related companies in the country and continuing to get bigger? What makes you tick? I'm trying to be Dr. Joyce Brothers here or something, but you've got the couch.
Well, that's fair. You've been very kind and very gracious, okay? I am very enthusiastic by nature. Okay. I don't dwell on the past. I believe that we keep moving. Years ago, I have no idea where I heard it, but someone said, listen, your life is like a bicycle. Okay. Pedal. If you're pedaling, you can steer. If you stop pedaling, you can't steer. Okay. So it's about constantly pushing, moving, trying. I am kind of relentless and it's not about me. It's about us. Okay. We are, I joke all the time. We're the Borg. Okay. We're everybody plugged in. okay? We're not all equal, okay? But every one of us has value, and the DNA in our firm is everything is teams. We're all built on teams, and everybody shares, and we all work hard together. You know, I've said it before, I'll say it again, and I'm not provoking. I'm saying being a privately held company allows us to do things that right now public companies won't. Okay. We treat everybody the same differently. Okay. Mm-hmm. We care about our people. If someone has an issue, we deal with that issue. I think probably the hardest job in our company is human resources, because I treat everybody the same differently, okay? Mm-hmm. And if I get sued for that, for treating somebody really well by somebody who feels that that's unfair, courtroom's a big place. We're willing to go.
Yeah.
Okay. We believe in our people, and we have a massive amount of married couples and families and fathers and sons and daughters. And I mean, we believe firmly in that you ought to be working with your family. If you want to work with us, and your family's here, we think that's a positive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we go completely the other way on nepotism, okay? Because it's all about production. At the end of the day, you have to have hard, productive labor. Not just hard labor. Hard, productive labor. That's what makes the difference. And everybody sees it. And we are a selfless place. Prima donnas don't last with us. They just don't like it.
Are you an easy man to work for, or would some people say, man, he can be difficult?
I think probably I'm an acquired taste.
Hmm.
Okay. I don't ask of anyone what I won't deliver. So all of our salespeople, you know, they're external salespeople. So they're out of their houses all year long. Well, our core group of myself, our chief investment officer, our chief economist, we travel and do meetings like the one we're going to do here. We sleep in hotels between 110 and 130 nights a year. We're on the road, because if we're asking our people to be on the road, well, then we need to be demonstrating. And the side benefit is, where's the most important place for me to be? With my best clients. Mm-hmm. The idea that I'm going to sit in some kind of corporate structure and understand what's going on with my clients, I don't buy that.
Jim, you kind of touched on this, and you've never shied away from this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to watch you speak here in a few minutes here in St. Louis, and you will get into the politics of the day, which may not have been a big thing 30 years ago. It's everything today.
Right.
People get easily worked up.
Oh, yeah.
Easily offended on both sides. That
right,
can happen.
Right. Both sides.
And you've got a guy like Larry Fink and the whole DEI and the woke. That's a big thing. I won't step into it. You've never been afraid to step into it.
Right.
What you handicap this for me and how you bring this to First Trust. This is not something that you shy away from. In fact, it's a very important topic for you, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It kind of goes back to where you started this thing, okay? You've got a library. I've got a library, okay? I've got a library that I believe Churchill would be proud of, okay? Because I'm like you. I want to hold the documents. I've got every founding. I've got copies of all the documents that every founding father wrote, okay? I've got basically the literature from the Greeks to the Magna Carta.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, I like you. It's I prefer biographies over autobiographies, but I'm like you. And this, all these core beliefs that you just asked about, like why do I not shy away from it? Because this is America. Okay. This is a place where we set it up to agree to disagree. Okay. We didn't do decorum. The Brits do decorum. No one does decorum better than the Brits. The way they sent off the queen, the way they brought in the new king, decorum par excellence. But we said no. Okay. We got in little ships, came across here, said we're going to build a dome and yell at each other because we believe a better result happens. And we've always believed that. And we've had periods of time when one side or the other seems to try and shout down the other one. But no, that's not what it's about. Okay. Larry Fink can completely believe that. I mean, I've never met Larry. I'm sure he's I know he's a brilliant man. I'm sure he's a fine man, but I don't buy stakeholder capitalism. I buy shareholder capitalism. Okay. And the idea that people are afraid to be shouted down, one, or you can be canceled. Well, you can only be canceled if you care. Okay. And we don't care. And it's not because we're wild-eyed and out there doing horrible things. Exactly the opposite. We labor in a field for others. Okay. We spend our day making others look really good because we take care of them and we take care of their needs. And the idea that somebody is, because I happen to believe in shareholder capitalism, okay, that I don't actually buy the whatever current version of climate change. I mean, remember, I'm an old guy, okay? I remember in the 70s when we were told that a coming ice age was upon us and we better change our behavior to stop this ice age. And then we went through the, oh no, it's global warming. But then when it didn't warm, they morphed into climate change. Okay, and then all you have to do, you know, somebody coined it centuries ago, is follow the money. Mm-hmm. Follow the money. Mm-hmm.
I shared this with you mm-hmm. before we started talking. I get calls from people wanting to know, do we own that particular company or that stock or that ETF? And I won't name names because I just saw something and they're really woke and I don't know if I want to own that. And so we kind of talk through it, why we might or might not own that. Do you get the sense, because you are so vocal and so passionate, as we just saw in talking about some of your issues, and you're very public, and I'm going to see you say the same things on stage here in a few minutes.
Exactly right.
Where people on that side will say, this Jim Bowen is too much. I don't need that kind of rhetoric in my world, and I'm not doing business. Have you ever had that feedback? And if you do, what is your response? Like, sorry, it's a free country. Do what you want.
No. And have I ever had that feedback at the meeting that you've attended? Every meeting we try and get people to fill out their feedback forms. So last night we were in Omaha. We did a meeting at the Strategic Air Command Museum in Omaha. Okay. A pretty spectacular place to do a meeting. And one of the feedback forms said essentially exactly what you said. Keep your views to yourself. Keep your politics to yourself. I'm not here for your politics. Perfect. We agree to disagree.
Yeah.
It's America.
Mm-hmm.
It's America. I don't scream one way or the other that one side is right because I haven't found one side to be consistently different, as frustrating as that is. Clearly, I lean to the right. Clearly, I'm more conservative. But man, I've watched a number of times when conservatives bailed out the auto industry. A vote for TARP? Really? Really? We saved, the government saved the auto industry? No, we have bankruptcy that would have taken that. Mm-hmm. Okay, everybody would have been on pause. Many people would have been on pause, but jobs would have been made. People would have come in, rebuilt the businesses. And yet that all happened under Republicans. So it isn't one side or the other. It's a consistency. And I do believe in smaller government. Okay. I don't believe the government ought to tell me how much water I can use to flush the toilet, how much water I can use to shower, how much can I use a natural gas stove. At the same time, they're telling me that they care about the environment. Yet natural gas produces less CO2, 52% less CO2 than coal. And why are we not, I'm off topic. You get my point.
Well, absolutely. I can't help when I'm watching you speak, like this guy could have also gone into politics. But I have a feeling you wouldn't want to touch that.
Well, I used to say I'm unelectable, and then Trump got elected.
Oh my
politics
gosh,
is not for me. Politics is not for me.
Well, what about...
I think a guy like Vivek is spectacular. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think DeSantis is the man.
You
want to know what I think?
That
right
would
now,
be
that's
your
who I'm backing. Absolutely.
Okay, got it. Well, you know, when we look at where we are right now, and we look ahead to 2024... Mm-hmm. This is interesting to me. I'd love for you to address this. Everyone I talk to says, I can't believe we're heading towards what we saw in 20. It's going to be Biden and Trump. I don't want Biden and Trump. And I think, but we have the power to change that.
Exactly.
So if you on the left don't want Joe Biden, and I understand it's really difficult to try to get an incumbent an incumbent to back away. Right. But you can do it.
Right.
Those of you on the right, there is a way if you, even if you love Donald Trump, to say, ah, too much chaos, let's go in this direction.
Right.
We have control, don't we? Why is it have to be inevitable that we have Trump versus Biden? Nobody wants it, but it seems like that's where we're heading.
Yeah. My non-professional response is the Democrats are a much tighter controlled group. So they have settled. Republicans, not quite so much. I mean, we will have debates. Okay. We will have debates with, I don't know whether it's going to be 5 or 7 people. So we will have the chance to make a decision. And then it just comes down to people. I mean, you can get into all the voting issues you want. You know, should we have, you know, constant voting? Should it not be on paper ballots? Do we have access? All of the fights that you want to have. But at the end of the day, you get the government you deserve because you put it in. It's your point. Okay, so that's why when things get really, really bad, then things change.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll happen again. I don't want it to get so bad. Okay.
I sometimes forget you're the chairman and CEO of an investment firm. I'm just like, oh yeah, now we're talking politics. So I know because, again, you've been so gracious with your time and we have a limited time. I do want to shift and just talk about financial sure. markets right now.
Sure.
At where we are now, I think it surprises a lot of people when we ended 2022 on the downside. A lot of bearish viewpoints. A lot of neutral. You didn't have a lot of people pounding the table going, man, this is going to be one of the great years and the NASDAQ's going to be up over 30% in the first 6 months. But it happened.
Right.
In your opinion,
right.
Where do you think we're going from here, financial market-wise, through the rest of the year and into 2024? What do you see?
Yeah, we are really amused is the wrong word. If you look at the return, certainly through May, it's 7 stocks.
Mm-hmm.
493 of the S&P 500 were down and 7 were up. And they are, call them the Magnificent 7. They are astounding. You know, Apple's probably the greatest company in the world. Apple's market cap is larger than the entire Great Britain stock market. Apple's 11% of the S&P. The entire energy business is 7.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an astounding time. So what do we believe? We believe that we're in for a hard run. We believe that a recession is coming. People say, oh, you guys, you're wrong. There's going to be a soft landing. I believe that politics will take over the Fed next year. I'm sorry to say that, but I believe that. People can agree to disagree on that. So we think we're in for a really rough, call it 6 to 18 months. And then you kind of clear it out. We've got to digest all this massive amount of cash that we created, and then we've got to fight our way through it. But we will. This is America.
What is the Fed's role in this in perhaps causing a harder landing, as you guys see?
Yeah.
Is that too late? Is there anything they can do to stop it? Or do you think, as I do, this is just my opinion, that maybe that they will stay too long at the party and keep raising until they choke it? Because it just seems like the Fed, the pace of slowing inflation is not quick enough for them. And they want to step on the neck of it to more aggressively bring it down closer to that target 2% rate. And I don't disagree with you. I lean towards the recession camp.
Right.
I don't know how severe it is, but maybe I haven't given up that like a lot of people have backed away and said, well, we thought recession, not so much now.
Right.
Does the Fed have a role in this at all?
Well, yeah, the Fed has certainly made a role in this. They've chosen. Their balance sheet has expanded 10 times. I mean, we've gone from a scarce reserve system to an abundant reserve system. And so now we created all of this money. I mean, we created money to get us through COVID. And that money has to be digested. At the end of the day, we're monitors. We're Friedman guys, okay? And so you have to acknowledge, or we believe you have to acknowledge that. And so it isn't just rates. And the Fed will slow the economy. The Fed always does. I mean, we always go into recession when the Fed goes. And then people say, well, then we'll just cut rates and we'll restart the economy. Well, if you cut rates too soon, you are gonna Arthur Burns it. Mm. Okay, you are gonna create stagflation, and that's what I'm afraid of. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm concerned because the drums on that side of the aisle next year, when unemployment starts going up, are going to get very loud and very hard to ignore.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jim Bowen, thank you very much. I know you're a busy guy, but you took time to be here on the Simon Says podcast. This is more for me than it is for you. So I thank you for that. Awesome. And as you know, we now have more of a presence in Texas, as I told you,
that's
because
fabulous.
My daughter is putting her footprint there. And so I've been to your place down there in Austin, your corporate headquarters, and I will come by and visit. I'd love to do this again sometime when we can explore it. One more thing. You guys have another presence down in the Nashville area.
We do. We opened an office in Nashville.
Yeah. And internationally too, are you guys?
Yeah, we have offices in London. Yeah.
Wow. This is the success story that I love. So again, Jim Bowen, thank you very much.
Right. Thank you, Dave.
We'll talk to you next time. Thank you so much for listening, and please forward the link to this podcast to friends, family, neighbors, even strangers. They'll thank you later. If you'd like more information on our wealth management team, just go to your search engine and type in Simons and Cordes, S-I-M-O-N-S and C-O-R-D-E-S, Simons and Cordes, and the website will be the first thing that pops up. I'll talk to you again soon on the next episode of the Simon Says podcast.